This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast with a new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of film and television to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their projects made as well as insight into the respective art itself. Now, for this episode, we are talking to the director and producer of the new History Channel TV series, Hunting Isis, which debuted on Tuesday, May 29th, and the rest of the episodes will air concurrently on Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern. Hunting Isis follows a group of veteran and civilian volunteers who smuggle themselves into Syria and Iraq to fight against ISIS alongside local militias. If you're like me, you're surprised. I had no idea that civilians could volunteer to do this. Well, through the eyes of the American fighters embedded with the Kurdish YPG militia in Syria and medics supporting a coalition of local forces in Iraq, Hunting Isis then follows these guys as they begin the difficult push to retake ISIS's capital cities. It's an interesting story because these guys are not doing it for pay. They're doing it because they believe in the cause. They don't actually make any money. They're living in squalor. They're backpacking, for lack of better terms. And they're doing so amidst gunfire and the ever-present threat of death. It's a really intense situation that they volunteered to get themselves into, and it's because they believe in the cause that is going on. For me, it's absolutely fascinating what these guys are doing, but it's also life-threatening. They are very much in the thick of the fight. Snipers are taking pop shots at them, and the ever-looming threat of an ambush or imprisonment for crossing the line is always there. So they could go to jail at any time. They could get killed at any time. And they're doing it because they believe their part of this conflict is very, very important. And what I learned from the show is so much. I didn't realize that so much of this is still going on to the degree that it is going on. I didn't quite understand the level of decimation that is out there. I mean, you get an inclination if you watch the news, but I don't think the news has done it much justice. So you get a real boots on the ground feel for what is going on when you watch Hunting Isis. And it's a riveting show, not just about these guys, but about the conflict itself. And for this interview, we're talking to the director, Sebastiano Tomada, and Delirio Films producer, Christopher Leggett. They both stopped by to talk about the show and their part in the show. And Sebastiano is actually a seasoned war journalist. That's how he got involved in this project. And he talks a little bit about that. And Christopher talks about putting the whole project together, finding the men, you know, going through hoops to get this done because it's a little bit more complicated than one would think. And he also talks a little bit about how it's actually more complicated to film in the States than there to some degree. It's a really fascinating interview. I think you guys are really going to like it. You're going to learn something that you did not know before you started this interview. I can almost guarantee it, including a little tidbit about Syrian gas. There's a lot in here that I think is really going to just open your eyes to a varying degree, and be sure to watch the show and then follow it up with, like Sebastiano says in the interview, do some research, do some reading, read up on the conflict, because I think this is something everyone should really pay attention to. Well, much like the guys in the mission, let's just get into the fight. It's time to discuss Hunting Isis with the director, Sebastiano Tomada, and Delirio Films producer, Christopher Leggett.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, is this Sebastiano and Christopher?
You got it.
Correct.
How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're getting a slow start after a long weekend, you know, one of those types of days.
Getting ready to do the junket for the show?
Exactly.
I always open with the same question. When did you know, each of you, when did you know you wanted to be involved in filmmaking? Was there a specific moment?
Chris?
Yeah. I've always kind of had that bug. I mean, specifically, you know, when I was a kid, I was an avid film watcher, and you know, it kind of morphed in the era of documentary filmmaking, kind of this golden age, into moving more into the unscripted space, which kind of became incredibly interesting to me. You know, documentaries when I was younger were a lot drier, and so I was much more captivated by you know, the scripted stuff. But now with the ability that everyone has to, you know, shoot like Sebastiano did, kind of with lower profile and able to get these kind of amazing stories, the bug has bit me in the unscripted space, because the stories are now just as amazing and the access is just as amazing.
What about you, Sebastiano? What got you into this particular line of work?
I mean, mine was a little bit of an organic transition, because I had been covering war zones since 2009 as a photographer. And I'm not going to say that photography got boring. I just simply thought that photography to a certain extent for certain stories was kind of limiting. And, you know, I've always been like very fascinated by video equipment, and I have a lot of filmmaker friends, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to dive into this. And it worked out in the sense that I think that photo background helped me out a lot with simply shooting documentaries, just framing things and approaching stories and pretty much that.
Let's start with getting this project going in the first place. I was completely unaware civilians volunteered in this way. So how did you guys first become aware of this?
I was shooting a story in northern Iraq for an American magazine. And during one of those days, during the assignment, I literally ran into... I was going to an outpost, a combat outpost on the front lines. ISIS was already present. And when I drove up, I saw all these soldiers coming out of this bunker. And I kind of noticed this guy that did not look Middle Eastern at all. And, you know, 5 minutes later, I realized that he was an American. And he wasn't wearing, you know, actual U.S. military clothing. Had an AK assault rifle. And I was like, wait a second, this doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, and I just approached the guy and said, you know, you're American. And he was like, yes, I'm American. I'm from Tennessee. And next thing you know, after speaking with him, I found out that, you know, he was one of the first guys that were coming from the U.S. to Iraq to fight along the militias against ISIS. So for me, it literally was like one day I'm driving down this, you know, messed up road, and I go to this combat outpost, and I bump into an American who was volunteering over there. And I did not know about this phenomenon before.
Wow, that's crazy.
Walked into it.
Why was this story so important to tell? Why wasn't it so important that you guys created this TV show to tell this story?
Chris,
nobody take it. You're the origin, man. So.
The origin.
Well, I think it was a mix of things. I think, you know, the problem is that these stories in general are hard to showcase. And by that, I mean, it's hard for people back in the U.S. to relate to what is happening in the Middle East, especially with the, you know, whole plague of, you know, the Yazidis and the Iraqis and the Syrians, you know, being attacked by this, you know, so-called evil, this, you know, new Al-Qaeda. And I thought that, you know, approaching it with, you know, this American angle, and by American, I mean, you know, actually having Americans, ex-military guys and civilians coming from the U.S. to fight this enemy, kind of brought the story back home. I felt like, you know, people would relate to the story a little bit more and be like, wait a second, you know, we actually have Americans that are fighting a war that is not really theirs, first of all. Mm-hmm. And second of all, I've always just been drawn to conflict zones and to wars, because you see a lot of this reporting on the news, on CNN, on Fox, you know, BBC, all these like major network outlets. But you never really get a full understanding of what's happening on the ground. And for me, it was always just pure curiosity. You know, I was just naturally curious and always wanted to see things with my own eyes. And I just got close to the soldier in general, because after spending a lot of time embedded in Iraq and Afghanistan with U.S. Army soldiers, you know, as good or bad as you can describe these guys, at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of guys that are being thrown towards, you know, towards danger and hell. And you know, they're trying to survive and make the best out of it. And within these situations, these like, you know, crazy, almost beautiful, almost romanticized, you know, bonds are created. And, you know, after experiencing this in Afghanistan and Iraq while embedded, I kind of have this urge to like find out more. It's like, what is driving people not only to war, but what is making people survive war, you know? And it's, at the end of the day, it's not really fighting against a common idea or an enemy, but it's really about fighting next to the guy, next to your buddy, you know what I mean? Next to that person that will have your back no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it dropped me. I found it very, I don't know if, you know, I found it super compelling and captivating. I almost like wanted it, you know. It's difficult to describe just because, you know, you really actually have to be there in those situations. And once you get a taste of it, you're like, wait a second, you know, everything that happens back home in normal life doesn't make any sense. You know, this is the real deal. This is what friendship is. This is what brotherhood is. And so I just felt drawn to it.
I mean, when Sebastiano the origin of this story for at least for us, he came to us with some characters that he had met on tape and kind of, you know, had this idea. And I think what immediately drew us to the project as well was just the level of intimacy that these characters kind of opened up to him. And it was something that we hadn't really seen before in kind of these extraordinary situations. You know, I think it was incredibly interesting that these people put themselves in these situations and what drew them there, kind of mirroring what Sebastiano said. But, you know, both the things they consciously were aware of and the things they subconsciously weren't aware of, I think that drew them there. And I think the ability that we had, you know, to kind of live with these guys over there for such an amount of time, I thought that this was something we were going to really be able to see these Americans develop and grow in a really interesting way, kind of different than I'd seen in a lot of other war documentaries. I felt like it was really interesting, this idea that people were able to, three steps away from being over there and chronicling, you know, how simple yet confusing it is to put yourself in a situation like that. You know, that was, at least on our point, it was kind of just such a unique story, mm-hmm. Of characters, that it felt like a story we had to tell.
And Chris, as a producer, before you ever get a camera into Iraq or Syria, what kind of hoops and precautions do you have to jump through? Because I assume there has to be some kind of crew training. Do you have to go through the government at all? How does that work?
I mean, it was an immense amount. Well, so it was really unique the way this one came about. You know, Sebastiano, being a war journalist, he was already over there. He had been doing stuff, in, you know, some of the still stuff already. And so that kind of gave us an early access into this while he was kind of filming on his own. And then when he came back, that's when it actually, once it formalized, it got more complicated. We were lucky that Sebastiano is Italian. Because you can insure foreigners in certain areas that you can't insure Americans. So it became a thing of we couldn't even send people into many of the places we were going. You know, what blows my mind the most actually is, this sounds crazy, but some of the simplicity actually in this, because this series is almost exclusively shot by Sebastiano. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll watch some of these scenes that are playing out incredibly raw and immediate and verite, yet it feels like there's three or four shooters on the ground. It's all a singular camera most of the time. So I still haven't wrapped my head around exactly how we have all those angles on things during firefights, etc. But it, you know, it was strangely more simple, at least the logistics of getting Sebastiano in. Where it got more difficult was actually the interface, bringing things back into the States. I mean, Sebastiano, you can probably talk better about your experience with the U.S. government that would stop us on the ingest back into the U.S. after extended amounts of times in Syria and Iraq.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many layers of logistical effort and complications, you know, and just one of them was every single time. And this still happens to me. I just came back from Italy and I'm still like flagged. I just came back from a wedding in Italy and I got stopped at Newark being like, what are you doing in Italy? You know, it's like, guys, why am I still being flagged? I'm just going to a wedding. You know, I haven't like gone. And that was like a week trip. What do you guys think? I'm like faking to go to Italy and then I'm going to take a little trip to Iraq. Anyways, the thing is that they would keep stopping me and questioning me. You know, Customs Border Patrol and the CIA would put me in this, you know, small room and like, just excuse my language, but just bust my balls for like 3-4 hours, you know, trying to get as much information from me as possible. And I was like, my answer all the time was like, guys, I mean, don't you guys have your own people on the ground? Like, why am I supposed to give you these answers? You know, I mean, we did run into a lot of like crazy and fascinating things. For example, I don't know, Chris, should I talk about that, or is that or because that's one of the episodes.
Yeah, you can talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, during a military operation in Syria, in this town of al-Shaddadi that we were about to liberate, after the actual liberation of the city, me and a Western volunteer walked into this room that had sarin gas, and for the first time in my life, I actually had proof of sarin nerve gas that was actually used by the Syrian government. And then therefore by ISIS, because they had, taken over that military compound against their people. So, a lot of crazy little things that maybe, people in the CIA, FBI don't always have actual proof of, but, I guess we found out about a lot of things over there. But going back to the logistics, just bringing hard drives back to the U.S. or shipping them, you don't really have like a FedEx center, drop-off center in Iraq, or customer service to like track your package.
No Best Buys to buy an additional hard drive when we didn't ship enough. And I mean, there were a lot of those kind of complications of the equipment being damaged, with all the rough conditions. I mean, Speciano kind of created his own ways to get around a lot of that. But I think going back to kind of the most impressive thing of it was, with a couple of fixers and Speciano and kind of sourcing some stringers along the way, a lot of the craziest access was actually just finding the people we wanted to follow, because there's no centralized communication, looking for characters and talking. It is just a word of mouth thing. And it really requires Speciano and a couple other people out there to be kind of following the string and pulling at it to see who all's out there and what they're all doing.
Just imagine this, just to give you a general idea. Okay. Syria is, you don't go on vacation in Syria. It's a full on war zone. To cross the border, sometimes you have to get smuggled in. Other times it's like just a logistical nightmare to get through because they don't want to get you through. You follow these subjects, right? After 2 months, you have to get out. You have to send those hard drives back. But you have to understand, when you leave, it takes you like 2 days to go to the closest, safest city. A week later, you try to go back inside, and it's not that you just text somebody or call your buddy, hey, where are you? No, you're actually like searching for these people in this massive part of northern Syria. And it's a little bit of word of mouth. Oh, yeah, that guy that has the blue eyes, who's a Westerner. Sometimes it took me like a week just to like link up with one of the guys. So it was no joke.
How did you choose the guys that you had? Because it's not just a matter of they have to be entertaining, because you're with them the whole time. So when they're shots, you need shots being taken and you're in danger. You need people that you can trust as well. So how did you guys select the correct men for this documentary?
Well, for me personally, just because I had spent so much time with U.S. armed forces in these different war zones, I already had an idea of who was the real guy and who was the rookie. And I wasn't really looking for rookies. I was looking for serious guys that were there for serious reasons and knew how to actually fight, were actually, proper fighters on the ground. And that was just an obvious decision also, because if I wanted to follow somebody that had no idea how to react in a firefight, I would have probably gotten myself hurt. But that was my first choice. I wanted to make sure that, these were serious guys, ex-fighters that actually had, previous military experiences and had deployed before. That was my first choice. And then I think, the others just came along throughout these trips. And of course, with the help of Chris and Rafi at Delirio Films, we kind of developed their stories and we chose who made more sense and, who's the hero, who's the joker, who's the rookie of the situation, who's the young guy, who's the old guy. You know what I mean? I think it was a pretty organic process, right, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think what's really important for us is when we're trying to tell a story generally through characters, the idea is to find archetypes that will pay off in unique ways. That's kind of always, one of our things. We generally follow a lot of these people, and then sometimes we end up needing to pair back, or people become kind of B-line characters simply because they have similar arcs to another character who maybe is more communicative or more open. So when we were going about this, you know, we really found, we started kind of making tent poles. You know, we found the guys who were a little bit more, quote unquote, like run and gun, I guess, the guys that were more mobile units that had a totally different story type than Pete and our medics, who had a very unique storyline right on the front lines, who dealt with trauma and dealt with the, they were kind of our access point into the civilian population there, which I thought was an incredibly interesting angle, that gets covered a little bit, but kind of glossed over a little bit in the news. It's kind of just always talked about her, how horrendous it is, but kind of trying to get the character behind some of these people was always something that was interesting. So Pete was our access point to that. And, you know, trying to find people that lent, that were able to communicate, you know, what they're going through, because inevitably that's half the battle, is finding these people who can let you in, you know, because a lot of people, especially in that environment, can be rather shut off because they're in kind of protective mode. So, you know, it was kind of a weeding out of all those different elements.
People should watch the series to just to witness the intensity of everything involved. And at one point, I think it was Pete, actually, who mentions that there's a lot of days where he's just dealing with a multitude of bodies. I want to know, what was it like for you guys? Because you're either in the thick of it, or you're screening the footage first, you know, whichever, speaking to both of you.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like for you guys to witness firsthand?
I didn't have time to think about it. You know, it didn't really hit me that much when I was there. It always... For us that are covering these stories on the ground, it's difficult for us to actually get emotional or to get, you know, psychologically affected by it at the moment. It usually hits you back home, and it doesn't hit you when you're editing or you're screening the footage. It hits you on a random day when you're walking down the street and you see a child that's being, you know, carried by his father down the street and eating an ice cream, and you realize, you know, it's a messed up world we live in, and we're really, really lucky. For those who are lucky, I don't really know how to answer this question besides that. It's weird.
Yeah. I mean, for us, I had a little bit of a different experience. We weren't over there. We were getting footage. We were screening footage, you know, and it was a really, really intense process in our office. I mean, we encouraged everyone to bring their dogs if they had them, and we had dogs running around the office, because it really, you could feel, especially on new days where we'd get dumps of footage, you could feel people's just, you don't get numb to it. I didn't, at least, when the amount that I was watching stuff, every single thing really was impacting me still. And there are a bunch of times where it really affected you. And again, with the children, I agree. I think that some of the footage that we have, and you just see kind of this childhood that they're put into, that's when it really affected me the most. And it was hard to watch. And it was immediately something that you felt really, you had to toe the line. You knew when we were cutting these scenes, we wanted to make sure we weren't glorifying any of the violence, especially towards kids, especially, and making them kind of these graphic scenes, but also wanting to make sure that we balanced the line of illustrating what these people were really going through, what were the realistic day to day. I mean, because, you know, we have kids that are just out in their front yard who get, you know, hit with mortar strikes. I mean, it's just things that you don't see on the news, because they're so isolated to human stories, and they're not incredibly relevant to the war as a big picture. But in the world, you know, it's so hard to watch that, you know? And so it deeply affected me, and I think most of the editorial staff.
Wow. Well, I know I got to let you guys go. Is there anything you can, in leaving, tease the audience with the upcoming season of Hunting ISIS?
Watch it and do it. And, well, before you watch it, I mean, it's a little late now, but before you watch it, I would suggest everybody to do a little bit of their own research too on what is happening on the ground and what has happened, because I think it's an extremely important part of our history. I mean, literally the war in Iraq and Syria, the fight in Mosul and Raqqa have been some of the most, if not the most fierce fighting since World War II, actually, not even Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been one of the biggest military operations in modern days. So it's important. I hope everybody does their reading and reads more about it and gets as much news as possible.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I think I always say the biggest compliment a documentary can get is if it inspires you to look up what it's based on. And I did as soon as I was done watching it. I'm on Google. I'm all over the place trying to find out what it all means. So great job, guys.
It's important. And thank you.
All right, I'll let you go. So thank you so much.
Man.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
There you go. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Sebastiano and Christopher. Remember, Hunting ISIS airs Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern. It has already aired, so you can already find an episode probably on demand or something along those lines. So be sure to check that out. It's on the History Channel. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. We try to bring in interviews with filmmakers in the world of film and television when we can, so I really hope you enjoyed this one. Be sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every single week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch on Tuesday night and watch Hunting ISIS, buy popcorn.